Hello and welcome to the HTXT AfriCast. I'm joined in the studio today by Clinton Matos.
Hello, everybody.
And making her triumphant return from obscurity, the Queen of Memes, Lungela Shezi.
I am back indeed. Hello.
Yes, and you know why you're back, don't you? It's because it's political day today.
Political Tuesday.
Political Tuesday.
Should we make that a thing, actually?
Like, no, please. No.
God. Otherwise, we'd never finish. So, yeah.
Well, this is Political Tuesday. We're recording it on Tuesday, but you'll be hearing it on Wednesday. So if we say today, it was yesterday.
It was yesterday.
Just
okay.
So you know.
So, I mean, there's so much going on in one day. In 1 week, in a month, you really can't, keep up with whatever government is doing, not doing, could be doing, should be doing. But today, what people are probably going to see featured the most across news headlines in the evening, online, and in newspapers tomorrow is the Eskom board, along with the Minister of Public Enterprises, Lynn Brown.
Yes, so you said looked like your English teacher from school.
No, you said that. I love all my English teachers.
I didn't say she was like your English teacher at school. I said she looked like your English teacher from school.
Okay, let's...
Has this got bad connotations or good connotations? I can't tell.
It's got neutral connotations.
Okay. I don't know. I liked all my English teachers for the most part. But anyway, so... They made an appearance today in Parliament in front of the Portfolio Committee on Public Enterprises. So that features a whole host of members, MPs from various parties, so ANC, EFF-DA, UDM, all those parties. And so the main reason for them being there was that they had to answer for the reappointment of the very controversial Brian Molefe into Eskom.
So Brian, instant headline, Molefe.
Brian Crocodile Tears Molefe, yes. So he left in December, the 31st of December to be very exact. And then he made a return about a few weeks ago.
Right.
So, I mean, when he left, he went over to Parliament to become an MP, and we thought that was it. You know, he's going to be the next finance minister.
Right.
Well, according to rumors. Of course, none of this was confirmed, but, you know, this was just according to political rumors, et cetera, et cetera. And when the new cabinet was then put in place, he was sort of left in limbo. He's no longer an Eskom and he's an MP, but he was supposed to be finance minister. What happens now? And of course, like, you didn't have to be a prophet to predict this, but he was...
It was quite surprising how quickly it all happened.
I think it was...
Didn't he dance back into work?
He did. So, I mean, no.
He literally danced back into his old job.
He danced back into work, but because he had a crowd cheering for him. Okay. So the entire Eskom head office workforce was singing and chanting and holding up posters. And I'm not even joking when he came back. So he thought, hey, let me entertain anyone and have a good time.
Right.
So, yeah, right. Moving along, then the DA and, you know, a number of other parties said, nope, this is not going to happen. Minister and the Eskom board has to account for this, so they're in Parliament.
Yeah. Explain today, yourself.
Right now, they're still going on because, you know, these things take the whole day. And
well, they were supposed to convene in Parliament last week, weren't they?
Oh, yes, but Minister Brown had another, you know, meeting or something.
Maybe she was teaching an English class, who knows?
She made an appearance at X High School, we don't know. So, finally, D-Day is here. And so, I mean, the process was just pretty much straightforward. The committee asks them a number of questions, grilling, actually. And then she and the board respond accordingly, and we get our answers and we go home. But, dum-dum-dum... Surprise, surprise, like the Jerry Springer Show when they bring in the ex-lover and no one expects him.
Well, that's not what happened, Miss Brown, and we have someone waiting in the wings.
We have a certain Mr. Praveen Gordhan who has something to say.
Yeah.
So Praveen Gordhan, I don't know what he's been doing in the last 2 months or so since he's been axed, but he now has a new position within the same committee as, you know, one of the members. And so after the committee had started its proceedings and everything was ongoing, everyone was asking questions, Praveen Gordhan walks in and is introduced as a committee member, much to the surprise.
No, but it is. It's kind of like a soap opera. It's like
Stefano De Mera walks in and, you know, in the room and back from the dead, like for the 15th time. And, you know, so it was that kind of situation. He walks in, everyone's surprised. Some are pleasantly surprised. Some are not so pleasantly surprised. And he takes a seat.
Then he proceeded to cut her a new one.
Exactly. So his other fellow committee members, you know, asked their questions, and then it was his turn. Oh, my girl.
Which, at this point, we are not going to try and paraphrase what Praveen Gordhan
said.
Because what one does not simply paraphrase.
You don't just paraphrase Praveen Gordhan from the air.
So what we're going to do now is we're going to go to a clip of what he said.
As several members have pointed out, the questions are aplenty. The answers are all over the show. They lack credibility, both in the public domain and from what I'm hearing here as well. So let me also apologize for being late. I think context matters here, Shepherds. And the context is, firstly, I don't know whether the board lives in its own oblivion, but the public is connecting the dots, members of the board. Increasingly, the public is aware of what you as the board of Eskom are doing and not doing. They are increasingly aware that you are abusing state property and state resources in the name of yourselves, not in the name of the South African public. That you are part of, either wittingly or unwittingly, in some cases, I think there's enough evidence to say wittingly, a conspiracy to capture Eskom for the purposes of the benefit of a few. That's the reality. Let's not play around with sort of technical questions. That's the reality. And worse still, what the South African public is worried about is that we're reaching a stage in managing governance in South Africa where there are a significant number of people in the bureaucracy and elsewhere, and the boards, who actually are taking a view which says, I don't care. I don't care if you know what I do. I don't care if you know that public resources are going elsewhere. I don't care how many reports the public protector or anybody else provides, because I'm protected. The question is by whom and at what cost? And how will history record your role, ultimately, in this regard? Because this is the critical institution in the South African economy, as we learned in the period 2010 and thereabouts. That when Eskom doesn't work, it has a massive impact on economic growth, it has a massive impact on job creation in South Africa, it has a massive impact on enterprises in South Africa, and today, I don't think we've recovered from that yet, notwithstanding the fancy footwork that we've been doing. And I don't want to talk about the exchanges. So the first point I'm making, Chairperson, is context matters. That this is not just one isolated incident of hiring and firing and retiring and not retiring and maternity leave or otherwise. This is part of a pattern. Last week, the South African Council of Churches produced its preliminary report, which helps us to begin to connect the dots and understand what is actually happening in this context. And what we need to know from the board is, are they still going to do what we used to do as activists before the security police? The minister and the deputy minister will know that, I think. You know, we used to keep a straight face, notwithstanding how many days we were in solitary confinement, and notwithstanding whatever pressure we were put under to answer questions about our affiliation to banned organizations or not. That's what I see. Straight faces. Because we believe that, you know, whatever we pout out in the public domain, nobody's going to be able to challenge in any significant way. And sometimes we do it with extreme arrogance as well. It's remarkable. Whereas we're supposed to be serving a public institution. The second point is worth repeating. In much of the literature of my party and its policy documents, and I'm sure many others share that as well, institutions like the state-owned entities are a crucial part of the developmental state. They are a crucial part of assisting the developmental process. But here we are busy at all sorts of levels, parceling out state assets, state resources, state procurement to a handful of beneficiaries. And again, if we think we're bluffing the public, we've got a thing coming. And that's why, Chairperson, what we do as a parliamentary committee can either give us credibility as parliament in this process, or we would also be accused of being co-conspirators, inverted commas, in this process.
So as you've heard, he really laid into him. Some of his, what you haven't heard unless you were watching live, the question that came from some of the other members. They're pretty much, you know, straightforward and, you know, very, well, the EFF's own questions were very much true EFF style. They mentioned the Guptas and. And the DA's own was also a very, you know.
He hasn't even accounted for the Saxon world shebeen.
Typical EFF and DA kind of questioning, but Minister Pravin was very, former Minister Pravin Gordhan.
Prav. Call him Prav.
PG. Braji. You know, Uncle G. Whatever. Uncle G. So, he was very tactful. So, his tone was still very much, you know, calm and, you know, no emotion in it whatsoever. But he laid into them so tactfully that when he was done, when he was done with his questioning, he got a round of applause from the other committee members.
So you're saying his roast went over well and he got a round of applause?
Very much. I mean, drop mic. If he could, he would have dropped that mic right after the speech.
That gif of the people falling backwards and going, oh.
Exactly. I mean, if this was a visual thing, we'd literally throw in a whole lot of memes and just to complete the whole thing. So, yeah.
Well, at this point, though, he's like one of the few people in a position to be as searing as he likes. It's not like he's going to lose his job, is
he
it?
Yes, he is. He's not an MP as in like the others who are.
He's not a cabinet member
anymore.
So
he's not under.
He's basically a member of the party.
In good standing. And, you know, he's sort of in limbo, but since he's now a committee member, he's got something to do from 9 to 5 every day.
But the thing about him is that you said that on Twitter you could basically see that there was a schism in the ANC support base.
True. And so, I mean, for
it's like Team
anyone,
Pravin and Team
Zuma. So if you follow politics or have been following South African politics since well before the cabinet's reshuffle, you'd know that the ANC is quite factionalized at this point in time, no matter how much they deny it. And there are different factions. It's not just Team Pravin and Team Jacob. It's Team Cyril. It's Team Nkosazana Dlamini-Zuma. It's Team, I think there are like 10 different factions.
Who's on Team Clinton?
Just me.
Just
a lone wolf.
You sounded so forlorn there. Just me, man.
It's that bad.
No,
it's,
just me.
I don't know. Talk of politics and this stuff in South Africa always makes me despondent.
Your head spins just from the sheer.
I don't think his head spins. I think it's just his face drops.
I don't know. It's not like we say.
You can hear it in your voice.
I've always thought when I was little, I was like, oh, South Africa's got it really bad. And then I found the internet and news and everywhere politicians are. Bad.
You sound like Doug Stanhope.
Why?
Well, Doug Stanhope did this routine where he said, like, you know, have you ever heard old people go, "What I've lost in age, I've gained in wisdom." And he goes, "Rubbish. I haven't learned one fact since I was 21 years old that didn't just depress me more. I'd rather be oblivious again. It was nice."
Yeah, it was nice. I mean,
you're like that guy in The Matrix. Cypher, the one who wanted to be plugged back into the Matrix and not.
My
remember.
Brain tells me the steak tastes nice. Listen, okay, you say that in jest. I'd be fine with the Matrix. I mean,
compared to
whatever. Maybe we're already in a Matrix. But anyway, we went on a tangent there. Do you want to round up this? Sad story, Lungi.
So
I wouldn't say it's a sad story. I had popcorn watching this.
It was literally as a committee member of any kind of parliamentary committee, when questions need to be asked, you have to sort of forget about which party you belong to, but because you're still very loyal to the party, you sort of hold back as opposed to, you know, opposition
party
members. But Pravin was in there, like, he was part of...
Yeah, but this is really, really cool because, like, I think, I can't remember, for the longest time, whenever there's, like, a problem or something has happened or a decision has been made that has gotten the press completely and utterly frothing at the mouth, even, you know, like for example, a great example is when... is when Des Van Rooyen was made finance
Weekend
minister.
Special.
Right? No. Okay, and that whole story, you know, just looked funky from the beginning to the end. But the ANC were kind of a united front.
Exactly. I mean,
they were like this.
They were defending each other
exactly.
every turn. Yeah.
And this is kind of like the Montreal screw job in WWE, where finally like the curtain's being peeled back and you get to see all the infighting that goes on that we don't
hair pulling and the kicking in the shins So that was Pravin Gordhan today. Well done to him actually for not, you know, cowering and saying, oh, no, I'm part of the party. I can't interrogate them as they deserve to be, and so I shall hold back.
Okay.
Don't hold back is the lesson,
there you
I think,
go.
Maybe.
You know, if your opponent's dead and you're not out of bullets, keep firing.
Yeah.
There's that part from The Simpsons where they're like, stop, he's already dead.
that's which brings us neatly to a game you've been playing.
Yes, it's
which
called
involves
Strafe.
Lots of bullets, but I'm now having to hit the eject seat.
Yes, we're gonna do something new on the podcast, guys.
We're
gonna do a hot seat.
We're talking about wrestling. So what I'm gonna do now is I'm gonna tag Brendan in for me while I go off to a meeting.
Okay.
But anyway,
Nick.
In the meantime, tell Lungello all about Strafe.
Oh, this is going to be fantastic.
This is going to be so interesting.
When was the last time you played a video game, Lungi?
Don't ask me. You'll be shocked if I tell you the answer.
No, tell me. It's fine.
2009.
Oh, that's recent. I thought you were going to say like the 90s because that's of when this game is from. So
2009, FIFA 2008, I think that was the game. Mm-hmm.
So this game is called Strafe, and it's very marketed towards looking and sounding and feeling like it's from the 90s.
Oh, is it?
And the way they did their marketing was like super extreme.
Retro?
And they did ad spots and a mini movie to make a movie that looks like it was done in the 90s. And
was it all worth it, though? All that
well, I'll get to that in a second. It's, if you've, I don't think you've watched it, Kung Fury, and here's Brendan. Have you watched Kung Fury, Brendan?
Of course I have.
So,
hey, everybody.
Hello, Brendan.
No, if you did it silently, they wouldn't know. No. So, we're talking about Strafe, Brendan. Have you seen any of the marketing material for Strafe?
I've seen a little bit of it, not much. Yeah. I mean, what I've seen on like Steam and stuff.
Yeah, so they've done adverts in a mini movie that looks a lot like Kung Fury because they're really trying to hammer home that this is a 90s shooter.
Okay.
And not only a 90s shooter, but it's also a roguelike slash light. And now I have the unfortunate move, the unfortunate stars to take here. It's not a very good 90s shooter, and it's not a very good roguelite either. So it's two main...
so it failed on 2 points.
Yeah, it's two main pillars of gameplay and theme just fail. So let's...
But why, though? Yes. Why do they? Let's dissect
but
why.
But why, though? Okay, so as a 90s shooter, right, the game's even called Strafe, which is a mechanic in 90s shooters where you hold A and D and you move around. And
I'm glad that you remembered those.
So... you can do that, but you don't do it a lot because the AI of the enemies in this game is so dumb that they just charge towards you like headlong without thinking of themselves, so you mow them down. Also, as you enter a room, they aggro on you immediately. They just instantly.
So it sounds a lot like, what was the game we played? Necropolis.
Oh, Necropolis. Yeah, yeah. That's another roguelike, but at least that, that got some after release support. It's really frustrating because... in the marketing material and in 90 shooters, you think you bunny hop around. You can bunny hop in this, which is nice. You strafe around, as the name would suggest, and you mow down enemies, but you'll die. You'll die so quickly if you do it like that. So it ends up being you need to lead them down corridors and kill them because they're in like a single
file. So you're basically like kiting them.
Yeah, you kite them into a door and you shoot them.
That's terrible.
And that's how a lot of the game goes. So...
well, World of Warcraft and a 90s shooter roguelike.
And then what else do you think of when you think of 90s shooters? You think of lots of weapons, right?
Lots and lots of weapons.
The Mythbusters even did
at least 10.
Yeah, the Mythbusters even did the thing. It's like, could Doomguy carry all those guns? And do you know how many games you have in a roguelike about shooting? How many guns you have?
No.
One. You choose between an SMG, a shotgun, or a railgun. and that's the only gun you have during the whole game. You can upgrade it, but the upgrade stations are so far and few between that they're basically not even a thought. The upgrades you get are random, so you can't even choose the ones you want. You can sometimes pick up other guns, which act as they don't act as upgrades. They act as power-ups, and you can use them for a very short amount of time. But 99% of the time, you're rolling with one gun.
This sounds a lot to me like the Division sort of thing, where you pick one weapon and that's the weapon that you stay with for a long portion of the game.
That had more customizability and more gameplay variety.
But why did they go with this? Do you have any idea why?
So yes, I'm going to get to why, because it's a roguelite, which I'll get to in a minute. And the guns have to be reloaded, and they've got really small magazines. So you're using one gun most of the time, you're reloading all the time, you're kiting guys out instead of having a cool little interplay of gunplay. None of that's there. Again, it's not procedurally generated, but there's maps that have been stitched together by math, basically. And the level design is really bad because of that. So you don't have the great level design of a 90s shooter. You don't have the gunplay of a 90s shooter.
And you don't have the procedural generation of a modern game.
Yeah, so that's bad. Now, a lot of those reasons is because it's a roguelike. The reason you have weak guns and the reason they need to be reloaded all the time is to make it more difficult. So you die, and that's the whole point of a roguelike, to die and get better and better.
Yeah.
But it's a really bad roguelike because you don't have a lot of variety. As I just told you, there's one gun.
Yeah.
I mean, the last roguelike that Devolver Digital published was Into the Gungeon.
Which was a game.
Which was a gun based on gun, a game based on guns.
Yeah.
And you got a new gun like every floor, and that was amazing. And the guns in Into the Gungeon had a lot of punch. That's something I didn't mention. The guns in Strafe were just like, ugh.
It's just like a tool.
A lot of the impact that the developers spent working on was what you do to the enemies. The enemies are basically blood pinatas. You shoot them a bit, limbs come off, and the blood sprays everywhere, which I'll talk about this more in my review when I write it, but it's great, but they should have spent more time making what the player does more interesting than what the enemies do when you defeat them. It is rock hard. Like, all that difficulty from a roguelite and your low health and everything prevents the gameplay from being more exciting because they're like, no, got to make it really hard.
Yeah.
You die all the time. Most deaths don't bring you any real progress. So there's no cool, like, roguelite progression of, I died, sure, but at least I progressed a little bit.
Yeah.
What else is upsetting about this? The upgrades are really boring. And the reason I know this is because it has another, like, arena mode where you play as long as you can, see how long you can survive, like a Colosseum. And through that, I've seen all the items in the game, and the pool of them is pitiful. I think there's about 12 in total, and they make very little difference to how you play. So the gun upgrades aren't very roguey. The upgrades, like the passives and the actives, aren't very roguey.
And they're very much based on RNG, you said.
Also in the game, even if you have a great run, you're probably going to get two or three upgrades because the credits to buy them are so scarce. Everything about it is frustrating, not satisfying, and it goes against what it's trying to be, a 90s shooter that's also a roguelite. So I'm going to have the full review. I don't know, the reason I review is a bit late is because I don't know when to call it and say, I've given this game so many chances. How much longer does it need to?
Well, how long have you been playing at all?
Between 13 and 16 hours. I can't remember the time off the top of my head. I've spent a long time playing it. And
you just feel like you're not getting it. Banging your head against the brick wall.
I did beat it, but that's because the pre-order gun that you can get in the game is when you shoot it once, you win the game instantly.
You see, that sounds like my type of game. No, it doesn't actually at all.
I guess it's a joke. Like, pay to win, pre-order gun wins you the game.
Yeah.
And it would have been a good joke, but it caused a bit of hysteria when they announced there was going to be a pre-order gun because, as I just told you, there's only three guns to choose from in the beginning. And if they're saying we're locking a fourth gun away behind pre-orders, you're like, it sounds like you're locking away a lot of content. But no, it was just a joke.
Okay.
So that was maybe like one of the worst outcomes there could have been. Everyone who pre-ordered, who was thinking they were going to miss out on content, didn't miss out on content and got pranked.
Yeah.
Everybody.
Just a prank, bro.
Everybody who didn't pre-order just got frustrated, I feel. It's like, oh, at least I don't even get to experience a joke, but at least I didn't part with my money.
Absolutely.
And that's an important point because at the end of this, I'm not going to recommend this game at all. I mean, it's just, I can't.
Too difficult, yeah, too confusing.
It's one of those games, I see a lot of good reviews out there, but I also see a lot of bad reviews. I think on Steam it's mixed. And I'm in the...
That's never good.
Yeah, I think I'm in the bad, can't suggest category. I'm just going to load up straight from Steam here. I will have the full review. I'm probably going to do it this Thursday. I want to give it like 2 more hours or something. I finished the arena campaign, most of it. I've gotten to level 4. So there's 4 big areas, and they take a long time to get through each.
Yeah.
I've gotten to level 4 a few times, but I've died almost instantly because...
It's too tough.
Okay, Steam, 599 reviews. 65% were positive, so 35.
So there is definitely some contention when it comes to Strafe.
I just... Not the Holy Grail, but there's... been a gap in the market for roguelike that's also a first-person shooter.
Yeah.
There's been a lot of attempts. Off the top of my head, there was Eldritch, which is like kind of a Lovecraftian one. Mm-hmm. Lots of problems as well. Can't really suggest. There was Paranautical Activity, which apart from being not that good, was also marred with developer controversy. Issues. Can't suggest it either. Just before Strafe came out, like 2 weeks, there was something called Eternal Redneck, I think. So that game, Lungi was still here, if you're wondering. She's just not contributing.
No, because Lungi doesn't know much about games.
No, I just heard Eternal Redneck, and I'm like, is that like an official
thing? Don't say his name.
What?
I thought you were going to say the name of the El Presidente.
No.
We wouldn't dare, ladies and gentlemen. We wouldn't dare diss the President of the United States of America.
Not Eternal, Immortal Redneck, which... you're a redneck who's survived 1,000 years or something, and you wake up and you fight people in like pyramids and mummies and stuff. It's a really strange concept.
Strange is the word I'd use.
It's got a very Serious Sam aesthetic. If you look at it, you're like, oh, Serious Sam.
Yeah.
And that, I haven't played that yet, but amazingly, that right now is very positive on Steam. And I'll have to maybe play that. Maybe that's the
Holy Grail that you're looking for.
Yeah, I don't think it is either. I've listened to some people I trust, like Total Biscuit and the Roundtable Podcast, which is Mathis and Northern Lion and a few other people. And they also said that lacks some punch and everything. But a lot of people I like, and from playing myself, can't suggest Strafe, which is disappointing. Okay, so just to end off here, we're also going to talk about The Surge. Now, Surge is a game... that's much better, and I'm enjoying it, despite it being, it's Dark Souls. I don't know how else to say this. It's Dark Souls.
It's Dark Souls.
Now, this isn't, I know everybody's like, there's a game that just came out called Dead Cells, and it's like, oh, we've got a Dark Souls elements, and then like Hollow Knight says, we've got Dark Souls elements.
Yeah.
But no, watch a video of the Strafe. It is Dark Souls.
You mean the Surge?
Sorry, the Surge. The Surge, Strafe, you can see my confusion.
I can see your train of thought there.
So, it's Dark Souls, but instead of medieval dystopia, it's Elysium. You know that movie?
Yeah.
It's very dirty, industrial, near future, and the crux of the combat is you have a very cool exosuit that gives you like extra human powers and is also your armor. So instead of getting like chest armor, you'll get exosuit for your chest, and then instead of like arm armor, you'll get an exosuit extension for your arms. And
that's actually really clever.
Yeah, that solves a lot of like gameplay questions. Like, that's why like a normal person would have armor, because it's an exosuit.
Yeah.
That explains why 99% of the combat is close combat, because you're in like an industrial complex. There won't be guns.
Yeah.
But like tools that people are using act as the weapons. Some nebulous story stuff is going on, like Dark Souls, and everyone's gone a bit like batshit insane.
Is it as complex as Dark Souls, though, Clinton?
Yes, very much.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, the complex.
I'm interested.
The combat is very. Everything about this game is complex, basically. Okay. The combat feels a lot like. It feels more like Bloodborne than Dark Souls or Demon Souls.
Ooh, okay.
So you don't have a roll, you have a sidestep, which is like Bloodborne.
Yeah.
But unlike Bloodborne, you only have one weapon at any one time. You have almost no range capacity.
Okay.
And you can't do that move where if you lose health and you damage someone quickly, you can get some back.
Okay.
But you do have an Estus flask imitation. It's called like a health injectable.
Okay, all right.
And
I thought they were going to just call it an Estus flask.
Yeah, no, it's a health injectable. And the map design is very Dark Souls-esque. So you start in the bonfire, which is called Ops. It's a med bay.
Mm.
But it's exactly like Dark Souls. You go very far into the map, and you're like, oh, this looks like a new new area. But then you open the door, and it's like, oh, I'm back at the med ops. So the way the map works is everything loops and connects back around very elegantly.
Oh, wow. That's actually really interesting.
Yeah, that's something. Have you played a lot of Dark Souls?
I played a little bit. Not enough to make an opinion about it, though.
So one of the things in Dark Souls is that the map design is in such a way where it loops on itself. And one of the big points of discovery is, da-da-da-da-da, I think I'm so out in the field. But the game is very cleverly been directing you back to your base of operations.
Wow, that's actually really, really awesome.
So the way the game works is you go on, quote unquote, it doesn't say this, this is my example. You go on like expeditions, you load up with all your stuff, you try and beat a path as far as you can until you get back to ops. And you do that a few times and you find a boss. That's the loop.
Okay.
Right? And like Dark Souls, if you die, you lose all your currency called scrap. And then if you run back, you get it. Something irritating in this game is that your scrap has a countdown timer. And if you don't get back there in time, it will disappear, like evaporate. I don't know what happens to it.
Probably gets stolen by
the junk rats people. Or something. You use the scrap to upgrade your armor, your exosuit, and also to get more core levels, your power core. Your power core determines how much exosuit armor you can have on, also what like injectables and they called implants you can have. And it feels so much like Dark Souls. I can't even believe
just
it.
Just with a bit of a more modern twist on it.
Well, modern in terms of it came out late. And also, because like a lot of the bad stuff about Dark Souls is the challenge and they obscure stuff on purpose. I'm going to also have a review for that. I just beat the third boss and I'm about 15 hours in. So I don't know when the game's going to end.
Never, Clinton.
But I think I can write the review because I don't think the game's going to
change much. You're not going to get
I'm very much into the loop. And it's actually, that's a great part of it because last night it was late and I was playing and I knew that I needed to just keep pushing the new expedition and it would loop me back and it did. So I think at this point in the game, I'm like, I know what the game wants from me and the game is still the game. Yeah. So we're kind of on the same level and we know how to work off of each other. And I've gotten into a groove. And it's really fun. There's a few niggles. Your injectables, you get a few different ones other than just health. You can improve power and you can get stamina and stuff like that. On controller, you cycle through them. But on controller or even on PC where I'm playing it on the keyboard, you can't assign hotkeys. Ooh. That's really bad because you can just have one injectable and then it's very simple.
Yeah, but you would prefer to have access to all of them.
Like right now, I'm changing my game style to kind of compensate with the game's lack of controls.
Yeah.
Instead of it accommodating me.
Yeah.
Is
that something you could change in an INI file?
No, it's very set the game how it works. I don't know if that's on purpose. Maybe they don't want you to become overpowered by doing that.
Maybe.
Yeah.
But it seems weird that you can cycle on console on a controller but not through keyboard and mouse.
Yeah. No, you can cycle on keyboard and mouse. I'm just saying on a keyboard and mouse where you have more buttons, hotkeys would make 1,000 times more sense.
I get what you're saying. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. There's a lot of problems that come over from Dark Souls. And I won't really get into them. It's just that they took the formula for good and for bad. And certain things you really should have been told. What was the example I was going to have? You can miss things that will make expeditions and boss fights not impossible, but much, 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 much harder.
Okay.
You have to accept when you sit down and play this game that if you miss that health upgrade, you're going to be in a much worse spot and the game's going to get really more difficult.
Actually, it sounds a bit sadistic, but I really enjoy that sort of thing because I found it in Doom last year. There were certain things that I had to get that made the game a little bit easier. If you didn't have them, it made fighting bosses a little bit harder. I know
100% what you mean. Yeah.
Yeah.
This game is like Dark Souls, takes it up to 10. The conclusion I can say about Dark Souls, the Surge. But this relates to Dark Souls, is twofold. One, on its own, it's a great game. The developers, Deck 13, learned a lot from their previous game, Lords of the Fallen, which is also like a Souls type of game.
Yeah.
Great game on its own. It's also a great indication that other developers know what makes these games so good and can replicate them. So I can't remember, but there's like rumors that last Dark Souls 3 was going to be the last Souls game.
Yeah.
And if that's the case and you were worried you weren't going to get this type of game again, you can put those worries aside.
That's cool.
Because The Surge is fantastic. And I have reviews on both of those soon. But that's going to wrap it up for us here at HCXC. Sorry about the seat swapping and everything. Also, apologies to the imager user Mohaki, who we've written about in the past. We were going to have him on for an interview, but stuff got in the way. So we will have him on at some point. Can't say when yet, but we will let you guys know. Anyway, we will see you next week. From myself, Clinton, from Lungi,
I'll see you sometime soon.
Sometime. And Brendan,
cheerio.
We'll see you next time,
and
everybody.
Nick, yeah. Cheerio, mate.
I hope he hears that. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Sorry, the number you have dialed is not in service at this time.